This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran criticizes the UN nuclear watchdog for its code flawed confidentiality mechanisms, blaming it for a leak of recent confidential letter. Violent clashes erupt in the U.S. state of Washington during rallies held by anti-racism movement and opposing protesters. Negotiators of the European Union and Britain are set to meet in Brussels in their last-ditch effort to secure a post-Brexit trade deal. Live from our Tehran headquarters, this is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. It's a great pleasure to have you with us. Top story, Iran saying it'll shortly take legal action over the leak of a confidential letter sent by Tehran to the International Atomic Energy Agency. Iran's permanent representative to the Vienna-based international organizations held the IAEA responsible for that and said that the agency's confidentiality mechanisms are seriously flawed. Kazem Gharibabari noted that Iran's reports to the agency have been repeatedly divulged to the media while still considered as confidential. He stressed that reporting confidential information without following the declassification procedure is illegal. The letter contained information on Iran's safeguard measures and its nuclear enrichment plant in the central city of Natanz. A correspondent in Vienna says that Iran is concerned that the leak of information about its nuclear program could endanger the security of its nuclear facilities and also the lives of its nuclear scientists.
But this isn't the first time that this has happened. This has happened numerous times before, especially when it comes to the reports that the agency has on monitoring and verification of the JCPOA in Iran. So this has happened before. There certainly hasn't been a sense of urgency when it came to previous instances. And right now, with the tweet that the Iranian ambassador gave, there hasn't still been any official response from the IAEA. The IAEA has generally said before that it takes the issue of confidentiality seriously. Iran says the only option that Iran is left with is to pursue this legally, because this has not just happened today or this time, it's happened before. And in some cases, Iran is saying it has actually endangered the lives of Iranian nuclear scientists. The names of people who've been mentioned in these reports, for instance, those people have come under threat. We know about, of course, the assassinations of nuclear scientists and the sabotage attempts against Iranian nuclear facilities. So this has real consequences for Iran. And unfortunately, it's only the reports on Iran that are leaked to the media and not reports on other countries, because, of course, that's because the IAEA has the most extensive inspections regime in Iran.
Clashes have erupted in the U.S. state of Washington during counter-rallies by anti-racism protesters and supporters of President Donald Trump. Violence broke out after members of anti-fascist political movement Antifa wearing black suits burned American flags during a rally dubbed Squash Fascists in the state capital Olympia. Counter-ralliers retaliated by beating Antifa members with American and Trump flagpoles. Police say there was at least one arrest after a pro-Trump supporter fired a handgun into the opposing crowd. Anti-racism protests were also planned elsewhere, including in St. Paul and Minneapolis. The country has seen a number of anti-racism rallies since the death of George Floyd at the hands of white officers in late May. President Donald Trump has stressed his claims of election fraud in last month's presidential vote.
I think they say that if you win Florida and if you win Ohio, in history, you've never lost an election. This has got to be a first time. But the truth is, they were right. We've never lost an election. We're winning this election.
Has
Well, Trump made those comments in a campaign rally for two Georgia Republican senators who are facing runoffs in early January. The U.S. president and some of his fellow Republicans rejected the result of the November 3rd election, claiming the vote was rigged in favor of the Democrats. Their claims have been rejected by state and federal officials, and their numerous legal challenges have almost all failed. In the meantime, Joe Biden officially secured the 270 electoral votes needed to enter the Oval Office after California certified his victory there. Colin Campbell says Trump's claims of fraud may have repercussions for his Republican comrades in Senate who are trying to maintain their narrow majority.
The president's claims and his continued persistence that the vote is not legitimate has created problems for Republicans in Georgia and in other areas, whereas the Republicans in Georgia, some of them are saying that they won't vote at all because they believe that the system is corrupt. And this creates a problem for Republicans because they have a narrow margin of majority in the Senate. They need their candidates to win in Georgia. And there are two candidates running right now, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. If they don't win, if they lose to Ossoff and Dr. Raphael Warnock, then the balance swings to a 50-50 split. And who breaks that 50-50 split if there is a disagreement over legislation? Well, none other than the vice president. And right now, the vice president-elect, Kamala Harris, is expected to become officially the vice president on January 20th. So if you have a current president who's saying that the vote is illegitimate and that the system is corrupt and that the voting is rigged, and Republicans believe this narrative that their vote really doesn't count and they don't come out to show up for the election, well, then he's essentially handing it over to Democrats, which would further mire any type of influence that the Republicans wish to have with a Democrat in the executive branch and, of course, a majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives.
Let's take a look at the COVID situation. The state's fatalities have surpassed the milestone of 280,000 as the virus continues to wreak havoc across the nation. The U.S. once again shattered its record for daily cases for the third day in a row with some 230,000 new infections. Total confirmed cases now exceeding 14,500,000 in the U.S., which remains the world's worst hit country in terms of both infections and deaths. Top American health expert Anthony Fauci saying that some areas may need to reimpose draconian measures. In the meantime, in Brazil, officials reported over 43,000 new cases and 660 deaths. That raises the country's overall death toll to 176,000 out of over 6.5 million cases. Venezuelans are going to the polls later Sunday in legislative elections in which President Maduro's socialists are tipped to win with an overwhelming majority. The vote will decide the fate of 227 seats in the National Assembly. Maduro has pledged to resign immediately if his party loses the elections. The ballot has been boycotted by a number of opposition parties, including the Independent Party of U.S.-backed opposition leader Juan Guaido. Has labeled the poll as fraud, claiming conditions for a free and fair vote aren't there. The elections come amid U.S.'s and Europe's campaign of pressure and sanctions to force Maduro to leave office. The Western governments had unilaterally declared Guaido as Venezuelan president. Let's take a look at Europe. The EU and Britain's chief Brexit negotiators will make a last-ditch effort to break months of deadlock on future trade relations between London and Brussels. EU's Michel Barnier and his British counterpart, David Frost, are to resume talks to once again try and find common ground on the critical issues that have split both sides. The extra time came after British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and EU's chief Ursula von der Leyen held an emergency phone call on Saturday. Both sides agreed that significant differences remain, but that negotiations should continue. Britain left the European Union at the end of January, but remains under EU trading rules. The two sides must reach a deal before the Brexit transition period ends on September the 31st. Now let's bring in our Brussels correspondent, Jerome Hughes. Jerome, good to have you with us. What we know about this is that still outstanding issues remain. Is there hope in the tunnel with this last-ditch effort?
Well, Behrouz, I think there seems to be some hope. I mean, we'll have the UK's chief negotiator, David Frost, arriving here in Brussels in about 3 hours' time by train from London. And they're going to have, we keep hearing this word, it's a bit of a cliche at this stage, but intensive negotiations. And I think because of the time frame involved here, these really will be the most intensive negotiations so far. Because Michel Barnier, the EU's chief negotiator, he is actually, he is due to brief the EU ambassadors tomorrow morning, Monday, to give them the latest position in terms of these talks. And then Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the Commission, and Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, then are due to hold sort of another call Monday evening, tomorrow evening, to basically see if they have come to an agreement. But there are a few different things happening here. I mean, just as worth mentioning as well, you mentioned about the chances of a deal. Well, the Irish Foreign Minister, in a newspaper article that's published today, Simon Coveney, he says that a trade deal is 97 or 98% complete. So that gives you an idea that really this is almost finalized, you could say. But the major issue, I mean, apart from we keep talking about the 3 points, but the big point in all of those is the EU having access to the UK's fishing waters. That's something that needs to be resolved. But when you consider that one of the sort of key players in all of this is saying that it's up to 98% complete, it gives you a sign that there could be a deal. A couple of deadlines could be happening. We have the internal market bill, which contains provisions in this which breaches the terms or the parts of the Brexit withdrawal agreement, and particularly in relation to the Northern Ireland Protocol. And there are implications here for peace on the island of Ireland. Now, this internal market bill, which was brought forward by the British government, is due to be debated in the House of Commons early in the week, Monday or Tuesday. And the feeling is that they would need to, if they can reach an agreement, then obviously the British government will withdraw the parts of that internal market bill and also the finance bill, which contravenes the withdrawal agreement. So that could be sort of a deadline. Do they need to get an agreement before that's debated in the House of Commons? Or most likely, will that debate in the House of Commons be delayed while these intensive negotiations carry on? But maybe the real deadline is Wednesday, because the EU Leaders Summit is due to take place on Thursday and Friday. And, you know, normally, if there's a big decision going to be made, it's made before the summit takes place, because all the leaders have to agree that, yes, we will sign off on this tomorrow at the summit. So maybe the real deadline is Wednesday to have an agreement. We have to have an agreement, I think, this week on Thursday or Friday, because to allow time for the any agreement to pass through the Houses of Parliament in London and also the European Parliament. So these are this is the situation at the moment, and I think the next couple of days are crucial.
Okay, so keep an eye on that for us. Thank you very much for that. Jerome Hughes, our correspondent in Brussels. Now, police in the French capital Paris have clashed with protesters angry at police brutality and a new security bill. Protesters vandalized buildings and set fire to cars and barricades. They also threw projectiles at riot police to fire tear gas to break them up. Paris police saying that 30 people have been arrested. A similar rally took place in the northern city of Lille. Demonstrators want the government to withdraw the bill that curbs rights to circulate images of police officers. They argue that a bill would limit freedoms and allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished. President Macron's ruling party says that it will rewrite part of the bill.
All over France, we protesters want a total withdrawal of a law recently voted in the French Parliament that limits the possibility to film the police. They also denounce an authoritarian drift of the French government.
That authoritarian drift is evident. Look to the proposed laws. The existing legal framework in France is more than sufficient to control everything they want to. Why do they add new laws? It's only to limit more the freedom of expression and to sanction activists.
Trade unions say that the French government is taking advantage of the COVID-19 crisis to implement antisocial and austerity measures like the privatization of the health sector and the dismissal of workers. Earlier this week, The Council of Ministers decided to close the main association against Islamophobia in France, the CCIF. French Interior Minister Darmanin qualified the CCIF as an enemy of the Republic and accused it of incitement to hatred and violence, discrimination, and of encouraging terrorism.
That's very surprising, because the CCIF has always profiled itself on the judicial scene and very little as political activists. The association limited itself to defend the legitimate rights of the Muslims. Now, in the context of an upsurge of terrorist attacks since 2015, the French government has entered in a phase of escalation of repressive measures that seriously limit the democratic liberties.
Amnesty International declared that dissolving the CCIF is a violation of freedom of association. As for now, the French government remains inflexible towards the social protest. But tensions are rising in high government circles about the way the security issue in France is handled. The protesters promise not to give up until an important part of the law is cancelled. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Now let's take a look at the Romanian people. There are heading for the polls to cast their ballots in parliamentary elections amid the coronavirus crisis. The ruling National Liberal Party is tipped to win the vote, with Prime Minister Ludovic Orban promising to modernize the nation. He's been running a minority government for the past year in the try to keep Romania on a pro-EU path. Orban's party has the backing of President Klaus Iohannis. The main opposition Social Democratic Party is projected to come second. The coronavirus pandemic is expected to depress voter turnout, limiting to around 40%. The first official results are expected later in the evening. The Pakistani economy is significantly dependent on the remittances from the Persian Gulf Arab states. Some reports saying the country has come under pressure by a number of Arab rulers to normalize relations with Israel. And that has cast a shadow on Pakistan's long-standing relations with leading Arab states. Javed Rana reports.
Protests in Pakistan against the UAE was unthinkable until recently. However, now it is not so unusual after the UAE diplomatically recognized the apartheid regime of Israel. The public sentiments against several Arab rulers rose in Pakistan after the UAE and Bahrain started aligning their foreign policies with Israel and India. The normalization of Israel's ties with the UAE and Bahrain is now affecting Islamabad's long-standing relation with some Arab rulers, particularly of Saudi Arabia and UAE. Citing unspecified security threats and rise in coronavirus cases, the UAE now has banned visit and work visas to Pakistani citizens, along with 13 other Muslim nations, most of whom have been angry with Abu Dhabi after it normalized ties with Tel Aviv. Without revealing their names, Prime Minister Imran Khan in a recent interview dropped a hint that Saudi Arabia and the UAE have been pressurizing Islamabad to normalize its ties with Israel. Islamabad has vowed not to give diplomatic recognition to Israel. Over 5 million Pakistanis work in UAE and Saudi Arabia, the two biggest remittance-generating Arab states.
Pakistan's economy is dependent on these remittances. Saudi Arabia and UAE have the tools in their hands to put pressure on Pakistan to recognize Israel. Pakistan's nuclear power has always been a problem for Israel. So therefore, Israel would love that Pakistan should give recognition to it. That's why UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and other GCC countries want Pakistan to give recognition to Israel.
Political analysts say that Pakistan is running out of options, and in the current situation, it may inch closer to Turkey, Qatar, Iran, and more particularly to China to offset pressure from Saudi Arabia and UAE, which are strengthening their alliance with Israel, US, and India. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com
www.cci.org/en.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first six. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this pretty cool Sunday, December 6th, 2020. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is a Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our listeners around the world, then record your voice and send it to us and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Keep us company until the end of the program. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very useful and important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us to provide a better service to our listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us normally. However, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus pandemic around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So please be patient until the disease is controlled around the world. Then IRIB English Radio can get back on track and send you paper QSL cards and also the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Musharraf Hussain Jahangir from India, Hasna from India also, and Zach Alvarez from the Philippines. Musharraf Hussain, Hasna, and Zach Alvarez, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Thank you again. And also a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during our program, I will read their letters and emails, including Ivan Zeleny from Russia. Ivan Zeleny is one of our regular listeners who has sent us an email. And Arun Kumar from India also has sent us an email. From Italy, we have an email from Enzo Pistone. Enzo Pistone is also one of our regular listeners. Also, we have an email from Sweden. This email is from Jarl Sinevak. And we have an email from Chris Malbouf from British Columbia, Canada. Dear listeners, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages just in seconds. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we have an email from Russia. This email is from Ivan Zeleny, one of our regular listeners. Ivan says, thank you for your letter. In our country and in my city, coronavirus no longer particularly affects people's lives. Therefore, my wife and I enjoy wearing masks in public places. We often use hand sanitizers and strictly follow all the recommendations of epidemiologists. When we get home from the store, we immediately thoroughly disinfect all food packages and bags, clean our shoes, and constantly do wet cleaning with disinfectants. Polyclinics and hospitals all have begun to accept fewer patients with various chronic diseases, as patients voluntarily do not want to create an extra burden on tired doctors. We also rarely visit doctors, because in a few months, we mastered simple medical knowledge. Many residents of my city, through social networks on the internet, constantly write words of gratitude to doctors. I wish all IRIB staff and their families good health. First of all, salam and greetings to you, Ivan Zeleny from Russia. And thank you for writing this email to us. It's good news. The situation regarding coronavirus in your country, as you mentioned, is great, and that's the good news. We hope the disease is controlled globally around the world, and anyone affected by coronavirus gets healthy very soon. Again, thank you for writing to us, and we wish all the best and good health for you and your family. And also all the Russians and all people around the world. Ivan Zeleny from Russia, write to us very soon. We're looking forward to hearing from you soon in the future. Tell us which programs you like the best in your upcoming emails. Stay healthy and safe. Also, we have an email from Sweden. This email is from Jarl Sinevag. Jarl says, "Now, finally, a small bit of criticism. I have not got any QSLs from IRIB, and I feel rather unhappy about it. I'm expecting a change to the better during the year 2020. With all the very best to you all from your listener in Sweden. First of all, greetings to you, Jarl Sinevak from Sweden, and thank you for writing this message to IRIB English Radio. I wish you're doing fine, and regarding your comment about not receiving the paper QSL cards, I have to note that it's pretty normal. Please don't get unhappy about that. As you may know, with the outbreak of coronavirus around the world, we can't send any item, any material, including paper QSL cards and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio to you, and that is due to protocols and hygienic rules and regulations. So please let this mutual relationship keep on, and keep in touch with us in upcoming emails. And anyway, tell us your views about our programs. You can listen to the radio and enjoy it to IRIB English Radio, and tell us your views about our programs. Anyway, as you mentioned, and as I have said several times during our programs, please don't worry about that. As the disease is controlled around the world, IRIB English Radio can get back to the tradition of sending its dear listeners, as you may know, the souvenirs, the postcards, and the paper QSL cards. Thank you again for writing to IRIB English Radio, Jarl Sinevag from Sweden. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from N. Arun Kumar from India. N. Arun Kumar says, "I am Kumar from Chennai or Madras, a coastal city in southern part of India. Thanks for your mail. In India, as we have several persons affected with COVID-19 disease, some states like Tamil Nadu, where I live, have announced lockdowns to curtail the spread of COVID-19 disease. I keep myself engaged listening to shortwave radio stations like IRIB English Radio. I have a lot of books which I did not read because of my busy schedule before the COVID-19 lockdown. But now, as we cannot go out because of the lockdown, I have started reading the unfinished books. As I am a radio operator, I get connected to other radios across the world to get to know about COVID-19 disease spread in their countries. Me and my 8-year-old son, Pranav Arun Kumar, are philatelists collecting stamps of several countries. So we browse online websites like Stanley Gibbons, India Post, Australia Post, Pitcairn Island, Iran, etc., to get to know more about the new stamps released in their country. Thanks and regards. First of all, greetings to you and Arun Kumar from India. I do express my gratitude for writing to us and for sending us this email. And thank you for letting us know about the situation about coronavirus in your country, about the outbreak of coronavirus. And what a pity. You said that you mentioned about the number of COVID-19 cases in your country and in your province, in your state, as you said, Tamil Nadu, where the reports of coronavirus cases. We hope everything gets back to normal regarding all the people around the world. And you mentioned that as a profession, you are a radio operator. It's a nice job. It seems that you deal with different radios around the world. That's great. Write to us very soon, Arun Kumar from India. We hope everything gets normal regarding the coronavirus disease. Stay safe and healthy. And we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Also from Italy, we have an email from Enzo Pistone. Enzo Pistone is one of our regular listeners. Enzo says, thank you for your email. Regarding your question, definitely, I would prefer to receive confirmation for reception reports via email. Often it has happened that any correspondence sent by IRIB to me has arrived with delay. In a couple of occasions, I received no QSL card or correspondence at all. Definitely sent from Tehran, then lost in the post. So yes, I am all in favor of electronic QSL cards. Kind regards. Enzo Pistone, salam and greetings to you, or ciao. I wish you're doing fine in Italy and lots of gratitude for writing to us. Also, many thanks for reflecting your views, your comments about confirmation or reception reports. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Tell us which programs you like the best in IRB English Radio. Enzo Pistone from Italy. Thank you again. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from our dear listeners around the world. Welcome back. One of our regular listeners, Chris Malboff, has sent us an email. Chris Malboff is from Canada, from British Columbia province. Chris says, hope all is well with you. The pandemic situation here in my country, Canada, is between good and bad, as there have been new cases of the virus. We are now allowed to travel within the province, and businesses are slowly opening and everything is restarting. Past the time, I like to read and go out for a walk and listen to my shortwave radio. I have not found any new hobbies yet. I will find one. And when I don't feel the threat of the virus, the one place I would like to go is the town of Mendocino to see the Point Arena, Lighthouse, and the ocean. Anyhow, that's all I have to say. Hope I will be able to listen to your session as I haven't been able to yet. With my regards, sincerely. And greetings to you from the Islamic Republic of Iran, Chris Malboff from British Columbia, Canada. Hope you're doing fine. Many thanks for this email, and also thanks for letting us know about the situation of COVID-19 in your country and in your province, British Columbia. We hope to hear good news about the control of the disease very soon. Tune in to IRB English Radio and enjoy this station, IRB English Radio, during the lockdowns. As you said, you found it as a hobby to listen to shortwave radio, and also it seems that you're planning to visit the ocean and the lighthouse. Anyway, stay safe and healthy, and write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Dear listeners, stay with us, because here we've reached the section of this week's interview, which is conducted with one of our regular listeners. We hope you'll enjoy it.
Yes, my name is Chris Jensen. I'm living in Belgium. I'm Belgian. I'm working as a civil servant for the government here in Belgium, but I also travel a lot because traveling is my passion, and especially traveling to the Middle East. I've been visiting many countries in the Middle East, and last year I visited also Iran, which was a very, very nice experience. Yes, I'm listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, so Tehran Radio, and several mediums. I'm listening to it on shortwave, but also on the internet and on satellite. And I think that's the future, because a lot of people think that shortwave is an old technology, which is dying at the moment. But I don't believe this. I think if you want to reach the world, you have to use a media mix. So it's not if, but and. So I listen on different medium to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So to my opinion, shortwave is still alive, and it's not a dead medium. I think it has still a bright future in it. Yes, I want to send my greetings to everyone, and I call upon them to, if they can, visit Iran yourselves, because, as I said before, there are many misconceptions about Iran here in the Western world, and my experience last year was a wonderful experience. I experienced Iran as a very friendly country with friendly people. It's a very modern country with good infrastructure. And everywhere where I came, people were open to me, people tried to help me. So I'm calling upon the listeners, please visit the country yourself. It's the best way to get an idea about Iran and to learn about the country.
Dear listeners, you just heard a beautiful piece of music from north of Iran. And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Many thanks for being with us, and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, a wave of anti-Islamic sentiment seems to have hit France, being led by the government itself. French President Emmanuel Macron earlier this year said that Islam is in crisis and immediately started the process of implementing policies to control Muslims in that country. The latest move by the French government is shutting down an anti-Islamophobia group. Is Paris at war with Islam, or, as Macron has said, is it simply trying to control extremists?
France is stepping up its crackdown against Muslims across the country. Earlier this week, the Interior Minister announced the dissolution of an anti-Islamophobia group called Collective Against Islamophobia in France. The group is known as CCIF. The government has accused it of being engaged in activities that provoke hate and acts of terrorism. Prominent rights group Human Rights Watch has condemned the move as a threat to basic human rights. It said the measure risks further stigmatizing Muslims in France.
Whatever its intention, this measure risks further stigmatizing Muslims in France. Shutting down an organization that raises legitimate concerns about anti-Muslim prejudice is blaming the messenger rather than addressing existing discrimination.
Anti-Islamophobia group CCIF has rejected the French government's allegations and pledged to challenge its decision in court. France has launched a crackdown against Muslims after two terrorist attacks in October. One took place in Paris, where a teacher was beheaded after he showed insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad under the excuse of free speech. Another attack took place in Nice, where three people were killed in a knife attack inside a Notre Dame basilica. Both attacks prompted reactions from President Emmanuel Macron's government, all of them targeting Muslims. The government said it would take measures against 76 mosques suspected of what it called separatism. It also threatened to shut down the mosques if necessary. Dozens of Muslims were deported as well. France is home to the largest Muslim population in Europe, and Islam is the second largest religion practiced in the country. Critics say Macron's government is exploiting the recent spate of violence to intensify its controversial anti-Muslim stance. They say such a stance will result in alienation and identity insecurity among Muslims and will fuel radicalization among communities.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. The head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Mr. Masoud Shajere, out of London, and activist and commentator, Mr. Mustafa Chare, out of Paris. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off in Paris itself with Mustafa. Why do you think we're seeing a wave of what appears to be anti-Muslim actions being taken by Paris?
I think
this is there's nothing new here. We all know France for being very anti-Muslim. So this is just something repeating itself again, especially when the government is in a very bad position, when they face with lots of difficulties. So I think that this is what Macron is about to do here with this new law and asking for the dissolution of this organization, and the CCIF. I think this is just going to put it into a loophole. So this is what it's about. If we look at it, we know that the term Islamophobia is very much criticized in France. So it is even denied that there is some form of racism against the Muslims. So if Islamophobia does not exist, there's no reason to have an organization that is going to fight and protect the Muslims. So I think this is just something that we have to add, and that is going to conclude the policy line that the governments, the different governments, have been taking in the last year or 40 years.
Okay, Massoud, some estimates say up to 6% of France's population is Muslim, and the birth rate amongst Muslim is much higher than the non-Muslim French population. Do you think that French leaders see this as being problematic? And do you think that some of these measures are being taken basically to try to control these numbers?
I think that's part of it, but I think it goes much beyond that. The reality is that in Europe and in the West, you're seeing rising fascism and nationalism, which is very dangerous. And the fact of the matter is, when politicians like Macron become unpopular and they need to depend more on this fascist vote, this racist, extreme right racist vote, then they start playing the Islamophobia card, as before people used to play the racist card. And this is really the reason. If we sort of remember, it wasn't the sort of that beheading and two incident that resulted in sort of this crackdown. That crackdown started before. Macron starts sort of going for Muslims, saying that Islam is becoming unacceptable, it needs to be modernized, and he's the secularist want to sort of interfere in and define what the right Islam or wrong Islam is. And this is outrageous, but unfortunately this is happening not just in France but right across the spaces for Muslims to be able to articulate and defend their legitimate right is being shrinking by the day and by the hours. And what we're seeing in France is an indication of what is happening not just in France but right across Europe, and it's very frightening.
What about that, Mustafa? I mean, the French God seems to be secularism. Is Paris trying to create basically secular Muslims only and sideline and perhaps control practicing Muslims?
I like saying that if you look at the UK, for example, or the United States, in the UK, you've got the Queen. It is a secular country, but the Queen is at the head of the Church of England. If you look at the United States, when you get elected as president, you've got to swear on the Bible. So it means that these countries, they have a different conception of what a secular society is. You've got freedom of religion. The French secularism we experience today is secularism has become the norm. So you have to be secular to be accepted. So of course, the French society and the government is trying to shape the Muslims. It's like we want Muslim without them being Muslims. So this is, and we all understand it when you understand the French society. It is a society in which you have assimilation and not integration. Assimilation means that you have to change yourself get rid of what makes you different to be accepted. So which means that they want to have Muslims who are no longer Muslims. So this is what they want, you know, Muslims who are ready to change their names and so on. But this is part of the French DNA. It is something that we cannot change. And it's not a matter of color, being white, black, or North African, or from North African backgrounds. It is part of the French culture. It's part of the French DNA, which means that you will find black people thinking the same. You will find North Africans, Arabs, thinking the same. And this is why the fight is so difficult, because it's not just about the host community that we have to fight, but we also have to fight about against those who are who seem to be on our own side.
Okay.
So it's very complicated.
And very interesting. Master, what about that? What Mostafa has just taught, that basically, although France says is an open society, democratic society, free society, but basically, he didn't say that they don't really want religion, but specifically, they don't want Islam. They don't want practicing Muslims. There seems to be such a major paradox and contradiction in what the French say they believe in and what the reality is being practiced on the ground there, especially by the government itself. Your take?
Absolutely. I mean, this is really outrageous. They're using the excuse of secularism and a special position of France to be Islamophobic, not religiophobic. You know, they don't go for the Jewish community. They don't go for the Christians or the nuns. You know, they specifically go for Muslims and actually become Islamophobic. This is what racism is all about. They talk about freedom of the speech being absolute, and, you know, so Muslims have to put up with the abuses of cartoons and so forth and so on, but they are not free to use freedom of the speech to speak out to the power in the form of, you know, these organizations like the CIF. And others, so they need to be shut off because they're Muslim. So it's a double standard. This is exactly what Islamophobia is all about. This is what exactly what the rise of fascism is. And it has always manifested itself and justified itself. And I have to say that, you know, in Britain and United States, we've got the same thing. It's just nothing to do with swearing on the Bible or Queen being the head of the church. The reality is Islamophobia is right. You know, only recently we had someone appointed for head of the equality unit in Britain who is Islamophobic. And, you know, it actually says she doesn't believe in Islamophobia existing. So really what we are seeing right across Europe and the West, there is an attempt to social engineer a new form of Islam and to promote that. And let us just remember the incidents, two incidents we were talking about in France, which was one of them was beheading. There were another two incidents, one shooting a priest, which happened to be a dispute, a family dispute, and the other one was extreme right, going out with a knife, shouting Allahu Akbar and attacking people, which was then shot by the police. But that did not start a vengeance against extreme right. The reality is that any incident is being used to undermine Muslims, and it's popular. You know, Macron is becoming more popular by being Islamophobic, and that is the cause of all this.
What about that, Mostafa? I mean, do you see the whole situation basically being ironic when France says that Islam is in crisis, when that country itself seems to be in total meltdown, with much of the French population saying they're not satisfied with their government, pointing out the economic inequity, government's poor performance with the pandemic, and growing police violence? But then Macron is talking about Islam being in crisis. How do you see it?
For this one, I'm going to say this one. 61 billion euros. This is the French debt. So just saying this, we know who is in crisis. How can you say a religion that is growing and growing all the time, decades after decades, how can you call this religion in crisis? You've got more people coming to Islam today than ever before. So I think Macron is in crisis because of the coronavirus and because the deficit of France. So this is, and of course, the easy target now is to try to find some kind of federation with the whole nation. And we know that Islamophobia is very, very strong in France. If you look at the French identity, it was forged in a way after the battle won by Charles Martel in 700 something. So this is when you have the first French identity. It is when this leader, war leader, defeated some Muslims. Okay, so this is why this idea is very, and this image is very often taken by the FN, the National Front in France. So I think it is more France that is in crisis. In crisis, why? In terms of population. There is this thing they call le grand remplacement, the big or the great replacement, with new generation of Muslims who were born in France from the third generation, okay, and practicing Islam. And also because of businesses, you've got lots of Muslim businesses, you've got a kind of middle class of Muslims that is maybe disturbing the establishment.
Masoud, how much does France's colonial past and colonial-like present play a role in the way that Paris views Muslims?
A lot. I mean, it is the psychological mindset of colonialists and the way that they behave and treat others and see others as sort of human to themselves. You know, these colonial powers, be it France, Britain, or Austria, they actually see the Muslim citizens not as equal citizens, but they see them as a colonial subject, and they want to treat them as such. You know, they want to order them around, they want to give them no rights, and when they speak out, how dare they speak out? You know, in the name of freedom of the speech, the power is used to abuse the powerless, i.e. the Muslim. But then Muslims are not even allowed to sort of articulate their issues in the form that we are seeing now, or what is happening in Austria. The disease of Islamophobia and the use of it by the bankrupt politicians, it's something which is very dangerous and is being effectively used. In the same way that the race card was being used and the otherization of a small group of people, which colonialism was using as the main sort of tool. Mm-hmm. So all these are at play, and we need to expose it. And I don't think France could resolve this problem internally. We need to take it internationally, because this is an international disease which is affecting all of us in Europe and in the West.
Okay, well, I'm going to get to that in a couple of minutes, but why would the French government, in your opinion, Mustafa, shut down this leading organization which fights Islamophobia, unless Paris actually wants to control those fighting against racism and against Muslims?
I think it is because of denial. It is clear now that France is a racist country. It is not just, I'm not talking here about the population, I mean here the institutions. So instead of facing the problem and trying to sort it out, sometimes in France we prefer to deny things. So this is why I come back on what I said first, that many people are contesting the term Islamophobia, saying that it does not exist. look at the term racism or race. Race was taken from the French dictionary some few years ago. So how can you fight against something that does not exist?
Hmm.
So we are very strong when it comes in France, when I say we, because I live in France and I'm also a French citizen, we are very strong.